Blog Talk Radio.
Friends, to your One World Talk Show with your host Greg O'Greer. That'd be me. Today we're talking to a gentleman, and I tell you what, this gentleman is wow. He does a lot of things, and I can tell you, I'm going to put the E in front of empowerment, because empowerment is very much needed. Mr. Mitchell Levy, Levy, L-E-E-V-E. Let's pronounce it correctly, everyone. So look, he is a superpower, I would say, when it comes to entrepreneurship. And I tell you what, he does a lot of things around the country. And I'm not going to spoil it. I'm going to let him tell his story from his own mouth. But I can tell you from what I've seen, what I've researched, the things that I've heard. And we need people like Mr. Levy. We really do. Especially in today's climate when it comes to American entrepreneurship, American customer service, an issue that really hits me really to the heart, being a prior corporate retail executive. I tell you what, it's, you know, things are becoming slightly different when it comes to customer service. And I can tell you, you can just walk into a McDonald's, an organization that at one point prided itself on customer service. Well, we won't get into that, but there is a real big void when it comes to American customer service and our shifts for entrepreneurship, servicing people, making them feel at home. People would rather go online to Amazon and say, hey, I'm going to buy my products, and rather go into a store and receive one-on-one interaction that we saw in days past. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about those things, because I think it's very important in today's age, right? So I'm going to introduce my guest, and I tell you what, we are honored to have you on the show, Mr. Levy.
Oh, it is great to be here. Thanks for having me, and wow, what a great introduction. Thank you.
Yes, and you know, I really didn't do you a great introduction, because I didn't talk about the ownership and the things that you're doing at Silicon Valley. I didn't talk about your four publishing companies. I didn't even talk about the 800 books that you published. I didn't even talk about the wonderful TED Talks video that I – no, come on now. We're going to do you right.
No, Greg.
I didn't talk about the wonderful TED Talks video.
I hear you. Here's the interesting part. So many of us sort of fall back on the accolades of things we've done. Right. And so I've done this, I've done that, I've done this other stuff. And here's all these things that say how cool I am. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's how people interpret what you do and how they think you should interact with them going forward that's powerful. So your introduction was ignore all this other stuff. Yeah, I've done tons of great stuff, but that's irrelevant. What's relevant right now is what am I going to deliver to your audience right now?
See, that's why you're on. That is why I was so excited about having you on. I'll tell you what, very refreshing. And I'll tell you what, I came out of a corporate mentality. And, you know, it was a great corporate mentality when I got out of college. okay, one of my first jobs was I was at Target, the Target Corporation, and for anybody who knows, one point back in the early 90s and the late 80s, and excuse me, the late 80s and the early 90s up until 2000, I mean, Target was the place to be. It was a retail company to watch for. They had a great culture, great philosophy, and I mean, pretty much after that, things kind of went downhill, and you know, now we see Walmart being the big juggernaut. Let's talk about those things. But before we even get into those, I really want you to really kind of give our 67,000 listeners a real good synopsis of who you are and what you do and where you come from, because it is definitely relevant.
Well, it's the who you are question is an interesting one, right? Because who am I? Family man, married 29 years, father of one son. He's 20. We just shipped him back to college. He's entering his junior year. He's doing great. We take 1 month a year to go to Europe and have friends and family visit us. And I use that as an amazing strategic opportunity to take a look at of what I'm doing, my inventory, and what things I need to get rid of and what things I need to keep. Let's talk about what I do on a business side day to day. So I empower experts, thought leaders, and businesses to share their genius. I mean, I could stop right there, but let me add a little bit to that. So what does that mean? The quintessential tool that people use today to demonstrate they're an expert is a book, but it is absolutely a worthwhile waste of time for anyone to spend time writing books these days, because they're more of business cards than anything else. So what we do is I'll do a two-hour interview with an expert. I have a team of ghostwriters I sent through writing school. And they will ghostwrite a book that's in today's vernacular, so it's 140 bite-sized quotes and 7 blog posts. And then we publish in multiple formats. And so I make it easy for anyone who wants to demonstrate that they're an expert in the space to reach their audience with their expertise. I make it easy for people to do that.
Well, you know what? And I can honestly say, just from what I'm seeing and it's been about 6 months. I believe it's about 6 months since I first came across, you know, the things that you were doing, and I had a chance to really look over the last week. So I can tell you the truth that you are definitely doing some very iconic things. And I'm not the type of person to blow smoke. I'm not the type of person to give accolades where they don't belong. So I definitely appreciate that.
It definitely don't want to blow smoke. It'll ruin my art posse. So yeah.
Hey, listen, we are in trouble now, though. We are in trouble, Mr. Levy. I've worked in many. I just told you one organization, right, where a company culture was spelled out in high-level statements and blazed on iron badges, I've got to tell you. But guess what? I can't remember any of them. I do remember Target, though. I'm be honest with you, but any of the other ones, Montgomery Ward's, Marshall Fields, Marshall's, I mean, I just – you know, what is going on with American companies, and what is it that we can do from your expert standpoint to kind of save that culture where it used to be? How can we bring it back? What is your opinion of that?
So did you actually when did you watch the TED Talk last? Is that a couple months ago or a couple weeks ago?
No, I actually watched it. The last time I watched it, and I watched it in its entirety, was two days ago.
Oh, nice. Okay, so let's start with what that is, and then answer your question broader. But I'm going to start with a really broad scope. So the reason I did the TED Talk is I like to spot trends and see. That's my superpower, is really spotting trends and seeing the genius within people. I guess those are two superpowers. And what happens is I saw the .com days. I got in front of that. I saw the democratization of book publishing. I got in front of that. Let me tell you where we are now. So in 1920, you could buy any car you want, in any model you want, and in any color you want, as long as it was a Ford Model T and it was black. And the interesting part is the business world that exist today and the structures and the rules and the processes and things we do directly stem from those days, from the 1920s. So now let's fast forward 100 years. Let's go from 1920 to 2020. And what I will say in that 100-year period, that we will have only made the transition to the social age, we've only made it halfway there. So what that means is we're going to have significant transformation in the next, and it's not going to take another 100 years, but we're going to have significant transformation getting to the social age. Okay, so what does that mean? So the TED Talk, so if you just Google Mitchell Levy TED Talk, or if you go to aha.pub/TED Talk, you'll get to it. It's on YouTube. And what I'm doing is I'm talking about, well, what do we need to do to be successful in the social age? Because it's certainly not what we've been doing in the past. And all the companies that don't make it, they're not seeing the future, not seeing what's happening. When you take a look at Amazon and Bezos, I sat on a bench with Jeff Bezos in 1996 prior to, it's right after one of the rounds of funding, prior to the company being public, and people basically laughed at him. Seriously, I said, hey, Jeff, write books, and are you going to stop there? And his answer was, well, books, because it's one of the most inefficient places in the world, and absolutely not. I'm going to continue to go and try to make things better and easier with today's technology and deliver the service that Americans need and the world needs. And really, what he does, what companies need to do, is focus on their customer, their true customer, and give them value. What companies do today is they figured out how to make money sometime in the past, and then they're trying to play up the Wall Street to do what they've done in the past and increase their margins by doing stupid things, by not training people properly, by not hiring the right people, by not paying the right amount of money. So they're trying to do stupid things make sure that Wall Street's happy with them. And what they're doing for that quarter-to-quarter gain is they're ultimately putting in the process, they're putting in the approach their ultimate demise. And so let's – now I'm going to simplify it. Here's what I say in the TED Talk. We do business with those we know, like, and trust. It's as simple as that. So you got to be known.
Right.
And by definition, once you're known – if you're not liked and not trusted, then you're going to be known in a bad way. So then you have to do business like your mom and your grandma told you to do. You know, you be nice to others and you do the right thing.
Uh-huh.
And all the things that are relevant in that old handshake economy where people did business properly. And the thing that's fascinating, think about any business that's doing good financially and that you really like going to, well, guess what? You know, like, and trust them. Not just the company brand, but you've met somebody in the store, met somebody there, and they're a personality. They're a real entity. They're not this nameless, faceless thing. And so the rules that existed in the industrial age produced the type of company that was successful. Think about who IBM was during the industrial age and think about who they are now. And they, about a decade and a half ago, went through a massive transformation. And instead of calling themselves a hardware company, they call themselves a services company. Why is that? Well, that's where their money is. It's not just putting the machine in place, but putting the consulting services around deploying it for every company that needs to use it. Same thing with Oracle. Same thing with a ton of companies out there. So so your direct answer to your question is, what do we need to do? You need to kind of figure out how to avoid the mistakes that happen when you try to please your shareholders. You try to please the people who have given you money. And what you have to do is say, I am focusing on my customer. I'm going to deliver value. And how many quarters, quarter over quarter, from 2002 to 2008, how many quarters did Jeff Bezos said, hey, listen, analysts, you could love us or hate us, it doesn't matter. I'm not going to make a profit till we're ready.
Mm-hmm.
right? Because he was spending money building infrastructure, right? Doing the right thing for his customers.
Well, let me give you a story. Can I tell you the story real quick? Now, the story was that, again, as a young college student, Mr. Levy, I went out and I worked for Target, very polished. I mean, you know, you walk into a store, everything's dress right dress, you know, green world, blue world, this world, that world, and, you know, there's a certain mentality, and they actually taught me about guest culture. That's how I learned about guest culture, which was taken from the Walt Disney Organization, guest culture, make a person feel at home, right? So I said, well, you know what? There's another organization. This was like probably about 2001. There's another retailer that's coming into town. Maybe I can go over there and interview with them, and maybe, you know, I can make another 10 grand or something in a year. And, you know, I'm a young college whippersnapper and so on and so forth. So I walk into the store, and I interview with the store manager, and he begins to tell me about, hey, you know, our culture is set, and if we have a problem with anybody in the store, we go ahead and we got a sundown clause. That means you get basically by sundown, you got to get rid of that problem. And I said, the sundown clause. I said, what is this? The old Wild West? It was really ridiculous sounding to me. So I walked out and I went back and I told all my friends, I'm like, these guys are really crazy, right? So had I known what I knew about Walmart now, I mean, this sundown clause sounded like, I mean, you know, if you don't resolve the problem, what do? Take them outside in the back alley and have a shootout? I mean, I don't know. But had I known that Walmart would be the juggernaut now that it is, or then that it is now, I mean, I might have taken a second look, but, I mean, it sounded so absurd to me. So when you talk about certain things like Amazon is an exception. They don't just have a few statements that are on the that they aren't on a badge, but they have 14 guiding principles: customer obsession, ownership, disagreeing commitment. They are baked into every aspect of the company. How important is it to have a strong, dynamic culture, cornerstone culture of an organization? I mean, we've seen McDonald's, and I think McDonald's is in a little bit of trouble, and I don't know if it's about the culture more so than product delivery. So, you know, you kind of answered that in the last question, but within the next 20 years, where do you see the emphasis going? Where do we have to, what do we have, what would be the first top thing that we have to focus on or that you would focus on specifically to really develop a 2020 and beyond company made for the future? What do we have to do? What would you do?
Really, I have a very simple answer to that. Who is your customer, and what are their pain points? What are you solving? Right? And I have to tell you, if you're a public company, the question is, have you actually met any of your, have you met any of your customers? Do you talk to them on a regular basis? Do you know who they are? Do you know how they're feeling? Do you know what they need? Do you know what would satisfy them? Do you know what the pain point is? Because the thing is, if you understand the problem that exists, not from your eyes, not the problem you're solving, right? You're not solving a problem. You're helping someone who has an issue. You're helping them resolve that problem, right? That's a big difference, by the way, right? Let me say that again.
That's right.
There's a small nuance in there. If you're a corporation, corporations in the industrial age, they solve problems for their customers. Right. So what does that mean? That means if the customer didn't like the way they solved it, that's too bad, because me as a corporation, I have a better answer than you do because I see all these customers. You're going to do it my way because I'm solving your problem. OK, that's the way it was. Well, the consumer with the Internet doesn't live that way anymore. And we want to solve our own problems, and we want the opportunities to solve them in the way that's the best way for us. So what can companies do? Really understand who their customers are, what their problem is, and solve them. And when you figure out how you're helping the customers solve their own problems, then you bake in the culture that focuses on servicing the end customer and put the rules and the regulations and the processes and the empowerment, that E word you used with me, you empower your employees to be successful at helping your customers solve their problems. Mm-hmm. Simple.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I mean, simple.
So we're using the, and I hate the generic keep it simple stupid. I hate that, but, you know, I can't think for a lack of better use of a term, and maybe you might, I don't know, you seem very cutting edge, but and listen, I guess in maybe in your opinion, maybe that's the best way, right? Just keep it simple. Doesn't have to be complex.
Well, if you talk to me on any topic, this is what I do. I summarize a large problem, a large issue, a big component, and I do it in a way that you go, oh, well, that seemed really simple. So if you want, I'm happy to give you another one, or we can keep on the topic you're at. But for me, you got to look at the, if you don't mind, let me tell you another one that's simple, right? And this is in my space. So in my space, I said books were a commodity item, and you'd be stupid to write a book. Okay, so let me add on that. There are so many publishers out there. There's so many ways to self-publish. You can dictate into Dragon, have that transcribed, hire a copywriter on Upwork, send it over to CrateSpace, publish a book, and be an author. It doesn't mean it's going to be any good. It doesn't mean anyone will read it. That doesn't matter. It is easy for anyone who wants to be an author. Books are a commodity item. A business person who doesn't have a book is a business person who doesn't have a business card, doesn't have a door opening, doesn't have a phone, doesn't have the ability to show the credibility of who they are. So to me, it's basic that everyone should, as one of the things that a company does, have a book that says, hey, here is the pain point that I'm solving for my customers. So let me give you a bigger picture. So somebody will say, yeah, but I like to write, Mitchell. And I go, okay, and other people, and we've published over 800 books, so other people who like to write, some small percentage actually do write. As a matter of fact, I'll specifically tell you, only 15% of people who actually say they're going to write will actually write. So of the 15% who write, for a book that's 120 pages, the reason I say 120 pages, I like the spine size of a book at 120 pages, that'll take 120 hours. And then people go, you know what, Mitchell, I don't need you as a publisher. You're not going to add that much value, and other people don't add value. Publishers don't do anything for their authors any day. I'm going to publish myself. I'm like, okay, go ahead and publish yourself. And you can. By the way, one of the small keep it simple phrases I've said to my son since he was two is, hey, Duncan, just because you can doesn't mean you should. But anyhow, so let's say you go ahead and you publish. Now, we actually will save the author 200 hours because we publish in 80-plus locations. We do lots of things. And your book will be everywhere it needs to be. So those two numbers are 320 hours. So here's the interesting part. If we ghostwrite a book for you, we're going to take 5 hours of your time. Maybe we'll take 10. Okay, so now let's think about this. Should you spend the 320 hours, because you're going to not actually have to pay somebody to ghostwrite your book, and you make more profit, but you typically in your heart, you know books don't make money. You make money because the book then sells your services, sells your speaking, sells your consulting, sells your product, right? So
exactly.
So do you spend 320 hours writing a book, or you spend 10 hours, 3 months down the road, you're an Amazon best-selling author. That's one of our services we bundle in, so we'll make you an Amazon best-selling author. And you've spent 10 hours, you're an Amazon best-selling author with a hardcover book, a paperback book, and now you have 310 spare hours to market yourself as an Amazon best-selling author. Tell me how much more money you'd make there versus doing it yourself. So, Greg, what I wanted to say is when you hear that, you walk through each step of the logic, you go, oh, yeah. Now, it doesn't mean people do it. But going back to the keep it simple, stupid, it's just really simple, right? And by the way, one of the things we do as well, for those people who just don't have a good handle on social media, if our books have 140 bite-sized quotes, they're all immediately shareable on social media. So in our platform, you can click on a button, Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+, and share in any of those locations. So we're giving a couple quarters of social media content. We'll do a couple of videos with you, right? So, you know, the thing that's fascinating is we're stuck in the world for those people who need to write, oh, I got to write myself, it's got to be, or I wouldn't be happy unless it was a 300-page book. I'll never have time to write a 300-page book. I guess I won't do it, right? I want to make sure, let's go back to the initial question. I want to make sure that my shareholders are always happy, that I'm having upward mobile consecutive quarter-over-quarter increase in profits. So I'm going to, if my income is not growing, I've got to decrease my cost. And I don't care whether or not that ultimately affects customer service, because I don't see the ramification of that this quarter.
Can I please chime in? Because, you know, it's very important.
No, you're good.
Because I really want my friends who are national activists and everyone who's doing things on a national, and even some of the folks who are doing things on an international level, I need you folks to listen. Because here's the thing. Publishing is a way to continue growing your portfolio. So we really need them to listen to. And your company, your publishing company, we're going to provide the links, by the way. We'll provide all of the links on the website so people will have that information next up. It's very important for them to listen, and I just needed to highlight and benchmark right there so they can listen to you. Okay, so in 2 minutes, because we got about 4 minutes, very quick segment, and I need to do another segment with you at some point, okay? I need you to address Silicon Valley, and I hate to do that to you, but can you address that? And then really one last thing, I really need you to talk about maybe someone who I am watching, including you. I really need you to talk about Tesla, Elon Musk, because there are some amazing things being done right now. It's like we're in a pioneering age of technology. Can you talk about Silicon Valley a little bit, of technology, and where you see trends going from your standpoint?
And I got 2 minutes.
Sorry.
No. So I moved here 30 years ago. I thought the streets were paved with gold, and they are if you look at the right street. And it's not the physical location. Here's the cool part. Silicon Valley has, people have tried to replicate Silicon Valley everywhere, and they're missing one piece, right? So can you create strong educational communities where you teach people a lot of stuff? Yes, we have that. So does the rest of the world. Can you bring in money? So there's money available for ideas so people can do stuff and make stuff happen. Yep, and that's everywhere else. So those are two of the three things we have in the Valley. Here's the third thing. People who live here care more about solving the problem than about the corporate shingle they're wearing. So you've got two people from two separate companies, maybe even competitors, that are at a bar together or at a restaurant, at a conference. They're going to help each other solve the problem. Tell you what, that's a culture that sits in Silicon Valley that no other place in the world has been able to replicate. Because it's not about our company winning, it's about the world winning. And Silicon Valley has the ultimate customer service focus. Okay, so if I was going to summarize Silicon Valley, we'll do that.
Okay.
God, I should take that recording. That one sounded pretty good. Never did that one before. That sounds great. So let's do Elon Musk. Elon Musk is the Howard Hughes of today. Elon Musk is a boy who has toys, who... Actually, that has a bad connotation. Let's scratch that one. Elon Musk is a guy who sees the possibility of where things will go and has the financial resources and wherewithal to point and let people try. And what you don't hear, what you don't see, are all the failures that happens. And what you do see, because you know what? Like Albert Einstein, you've got to fail a number of times before you succeed. And failing... That's another issue with Silicon Valley. Failing is not bad. Failing is an opportunity to grow and learn. So if I was I'll leave you with one last thought, tying together both Elon Musk and Silicon Valley. If you're a VC and you have a choice of bringing on a CEO that, you know, has taken the company, done okay, it's done well. Or if you look at a CEO that had one spectacular success and one huge failure, even how about we do a CEO that did medium well the first time and had a huge failure the second time? Who do you choose?
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, every VC is going to choose the guy who failed, because that's they've learned more, they've grown more, they've been able to experience the world, they've been able to step outside of their boundaries. That's what Elon Musk does.
Well, I'll tell you what we're going to do is we're going to share your information. It's very refreshing to talk to you, and I got to give you some more time because we are really, really excited about the things that you're doing. So I'm going to leave that information on our website. And how do they reach you? How do people reach you with additional questions? Your website, right?
Just Google. Yeah. Well, Google Mitchell Levy, and then connect to me on the platform that's appropriate for you: LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snap, Pinterest. The platform that works for you, connect to me, and then ask me your questions there. Go to ahathat.com. That'll answer a bunch of questions for you.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much, and I look forward to further conversations with you, and thank you for what you're doing for business and American culture. So thank you. Okay.
Man, you're so cool. Thanks, Greg. Take care.
My
appreciate
pleasure.
Being on the show.
Talk to you soon. All right.
All right. Bye.
And that's your side.